Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. We got a fantastic show today. Today we're going back with Allison talking about, how would you say it, Allison?
Talking about the intersections between Western psychotherapy and Vedic philosophy and astrology.
Okay, fantastic. All right. But we're also talking about the notions of power and control back in the self and the spectrum between, is the control out there? Is the control in here? What's the middle ground of who we are and what influences we could exhibit over the world around us? So, as well as inside us. You are listening to Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry. And these shows are archived at KRUUFM.com. You could also get to the show's archives by simply going to my website, which is www.ardentcenter.com. Ardent is A-R-D-E-N-T. So www.ardentcenter.com. And you could look under the media tab and see YouTube links to the YouTube channels. Or you could simply go to YouTube and type in Ardent Counseling Center. Anyways, if you have any questions or concerns or ideas for new shows, give me a ring. Email me at scott@ardentcenter.com. Okay, enough about that. Let's get down to business. So we were talking about the spectrum before in our previous show of like how... Where is that sense of control? How do you use something like Jyotish, which was what we're talking about with you? You are a master Jyotishi, right? Is that how you'd say it?
I don't know if I'd call myself a master, but a devoted student.
You're more than a devoted student. You're somebody who really has a real deep knowledge, and you imbibe what you talk about and have a real philosophy as well as a psychology of how do you utilize it. And one of my... issues that I have with people who use Jyotish is that they use it as a way to, you would call it a spiritual bypass, where they're abdicating who they are. Again, they're almost essentially putting themselves back in a victim role, that the power is outside me. Oh, the charts say that I'm in a bad period, I'm screwed, so might as well just give up.
Yes. And so I think we left off talking about that there is a spectrum between an internal locus of control and an external locus of control.
Yes.
And between, meaningful notions of working with one's situation versus feeling like a victim versus some kind of appropriate surrender or alignment with a greater pattern of nature that is operating through an individual being.
Right. And so accepting on one hand that there is influences outside ourselves.
Yes.
We often think of ourselves, I come from I've got a doctorate, I have lots of degrees and posts and yada, yada. But so I think of myself somewhat as a scientist, right? Because I have lots of advanced training. And I approach therapy in both an artistic as well as a scientific modality where I look at both ends of the stick. But however you define spirituality, there is something greater than us.
Yes.
And even the most ardent atheist recognizes that there's influences outside what their senses can perceive.
Correct.
Okay. So there's something more than I could touch, see, smell, taste, right? If you walk into a room where somebody's been fighting, as example, again, you could feel the energy is wrong. You could feel something's gone. You can feel when something's off.
Yes.
Now, what happens, though, on the other side is sometimes we get lost in our feelings and we start thinking our feelings, our intuition means more than it is.
Yes, there's one of the things about human life is that a well-lived human life usually involves some ability to hold balance, And because we live in a very extreme kind of world at present, at least maybe we always did, maybe it's just part of humanity to encounter extremity. And so to find balance within extremes, you know, humans tend to want a kind of security that involves an absolute position because they want some kind of safety to fall back on. So they want life to be more like laying in bed than surfing. And unfortunately, life is a lot more like surfing, where you are trying to sustain a balance amidst very powerful and usually at least somewhat unpredictable forces, which requires both a kind of strength and flexibility and adaptability and a willingness to get up out of the sand repeatedly. So that, so we want very definite, you know, philosophies, teachings, understandings that give us a concrete shield or defense against the raw terror of being something very fragile and small amidst forces that are clearly larger than us. So to ask the question, in contemplation of Jyotish, what can a human being meaningfully do in a difficult period? The answer is going to vary from individual to individual, what that person can do with the situation they're in, because the ultimate understanding from the standpoint of Vedic philosophy is that there really is no free will, or only this very small smidgen of free will, but there is a great appearance of free will, more so in the West, which is a culture dedicated to the notion of free will. And so people actually do themselves a disservice often by presuming themselves to be the sole author of their experience or the major author of their experience, because then there's a lot more inner tension and a greater sense of responsibility for things that are maybe just unfolding of their own accord.
So, and again, this is the debate between us, but I think we both completely agree that even if there's little free will from a Vedic philosophy perspective, as you see it, there's still some degree of, okay, what am I doing with the circumstances that I have?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's some still choice mechanism there. And even on the other side of the coin, whereas we want to think that we have complete and total free will over everything, you know, we can control the weather, we can control everything. That kind of denial also doesn't kind of work either. You know, in a relative perspective, everything is changing. Mm-hmm. The notion, the concept of relativism is that everything changes.
Yes.
You know, from the level of physics, we think this floor that we're sitting on is solid. I stomp on it. But of course, it's not solid. It's 99.9% nothing. If you think about your own body, how much of it is water? How much of it is just atoms spinning in space? How much of you is you and not consciousness of you?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's still some balance between those two worlds. And we could dice and dissect the middle ground, but either way of this spectrum, where do we go with it? And I think you brilliantly set it out clearly.
So, which?
What?
Yes. Well, okay. Yes. Where do we go with it? And what are the meaningful ways to work with one's situation? So, you know, and one of the blessings and curses of the age we live in is that people have access to so many techniques, technologies, philosophies. They can get lost in the babble.
Yes.
But that also, you know, gives people a wider variety of tools to choose from. And so bringing it back to psychotherapy as a tool of modern times, particularly to help the more concretized, individualized Western self to navigate, if nothing else, their own mind. As the Buddha apparently said, there are things that are useful, there are things that are true, the things that are useful are more important, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So this idea that we want to take our own mind or our own individual reality and make it reasonably functional in even if we are in a bad time? Can that be, you know, can that be done? For most people who would listen to this show, if the mere fact that they are listening to this show suggests that they have some ability to navigate their circumstance, greater than, say, Nelson Mandela, who sat in a South African prison for 27 years. So,
but even with Nelson Mandela, he's sitting in that prison, he still had a choice over what he was going to do with that. Was he going to walk out? He didn't have a choice of sitting in that cell. He did have a choice how he was walking out of that cell or how he was dealing with that contextual situation. The contextuality that he was stuck in was the trap of his physical body.
Yes.
But his mind, he still could have walked out being the angry man and even angrier than when he walked in, which is what happens to most prisoners, and come out and be in a more destructive path. Instead, it wasn't just a healing, it was a path of power to make a difference in this world, not just for himself, but for all those around him.
Right, but not everyone can be Nelson Mandela. You know, for instance, if we take a look at Nelson Mandela's horoscope, which I did just the other day,
really?
Writing a Jodish article on the unseen, on the unseen aspects of life and the principle of the unseen in Jodish.
Where was this, by the way? Could somebody get a hold of this?
It will be in Michael Loughran's North American Jodish newsletter, probably in a month or two.
Okay, so somebody could look that up.
Yes.
And if, by the way, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, is there some way to get a hold of you? Because obviously you're brilliant and obviously you've got lots of insight.
They can contact me at premavaratini@yahoo.com.
Okay, yeah, that way name again, there's no way to remember. So spell that out for people. Or they could just email me, scott@ardencenter.com. But
yes, I should get a more straightforward. Okay, I have a more straightforward email. It's the raa1008@gmail.com.
Of course, it's 108. We're in Fairfield.
Well, you know, God's a mathematician. 108 is the number of completion.
Okay. All right. All right. So go on. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
So, you know, in terms of looking at Mandela's horoscope, first of all, the man is ruled by the planet Jupiter, or was ruled by the planet Jupiter, which is the planet of wisdom, knowledge, unconditional love, etc. So not everyone is ruled by Jupiter. And so not everyone even has the starting ingredients to go, like, because we want to say that, see, because we are, as you said it, fundamentally at risk while we're embodied, unless you have achieved the yogic power to be able to make and dissolve bodies at will, you are fundamentally vulnerable because you are embodied, no matter what philosophy you hold. You're vulnerable to physical pain until you reach a very high level of spiritual adeptness.
Right.
And so that is sort of the basis for the fact that humans prefer benefic actions and benefic people. But this, in an era where billions of beings and certainly billions of humans are very dispossessed. Let's say they want to have a relationship with the divine, but they're in very dispossessed circumstances. They're going to have a different cognition of who God is. Many people have to come to terms with the fact that God has a gruesome side. We want to say that there's a separate force, but there isn't really. You know, God made Hitler and he made Nelson Mandela for different jobs, obviously. But that's, you know, we want to say that, oh no, like Hitler went awry and Nelson Mandela didn't. To me, this is not philosophically true, and it's not even philosophically helpful to all the people who do live in circumstances that evoke a victim mentality. And I guess this is back to this point about you wanting to say, well, people are choosing a victim stance, and that's not helpful. And I do agree. On the other hand, when people who have lived their entire lives with external locuses of control imposed on them, then to tell them to get up and stop being a victim is another kind of imposition of the possessed on the dispossessed.
And it re-victimizes the person.
Yes, it re-victimizes
the
person.
You're blaming the victim.
Yes.
And that's obviously not the goal that we try and do in some therapeutic world.
Right.
But often, I think often in therapy people, when I train therapists, and I train lots of therapists, they almost enable clients to jump between. There's three poles, by the way. There's victim,
perpetrator,
victimizer, or
victim, perpetrator, and rescuer.
And rescuer. And so people jump between the three.
Yes.
And they externalize and internalize those three poles.
Yes.
But, you know, I agree with you. Not everyone's Nelson Mandela. Sometimes, again, we're in a wheelchair, and I say to everybody's in a wheelchair, and we just don't know it. And sometimes I'm not going to be able to get out of my wheelchair.
Correct.
But I still have, and I'm going to keep asserting my thing, which is that you still have some control. What can I do that I'm in a wheelchair? And stop beating myself up and go, why am I in a wheelchair? Why is God cruel to me? Why is this circumstance? Instead, what can I create from the circumstance that I'm in? So I don't deny that God has created the circumstance, or that I'm under this Jodish, or I'm under this karmic position, or I'm under whatever. But my contention is, I still can choose what I can do with the limitations, the contextuality that I'm in.
Yes, but it's how the choice is framed that becomes important, because maybe the choice that you, if you are quote unquote making a choice, or at least having the appearance of making a choice, maybe the choice you want to make isn't in the same box as the originators of psychotherapy or the originators of choice. Maybe the choice you want to make is, you know, it is to kill people because that's an equally valid choice in the circumstance.
Okay, so let's say, by the way, you're listening to KRUU 100.1 on your FM dial, Mental Health Matters. Today we're with the wonderful, powerful Allison talking about Jodish, but we're also talking about really choice, the limits in between, or how would you frame the question?
Well, we're talking about the fundamental reason why humans are prejudiced in favor of beneficence and benefic actions over maleficence, or what they see as maleficence or malefic actions. And I am talking about why that may not work so well for all very dispossessed people. And so in terms of, and then we're talking about, okay, you got a person, you know, who metaphorically or literally has been through the ringer and is now in a wheelchair.
Right.
And you want them to start, like, acting like they have a choice or feeling like they have a choice.
Within the limitations that they have.
Within the limitations
or
that they have.
Let's pick yours. Okay, I'm a murderer. I'm destined to be a murderer. That's who I am. Okay?
Right.
Okay? Now, my statement is, you can be a murderer and join ISIS and go kill lots of people. Or you could sit there and say, I'm a murderer and I'm going to go kill ISIS people who are trying to kill lots of people. I could be a soldier who's essentially killing, so to speak, in a productive way, if that makes any sense. You know, if you had the option to kill Hitler, would you have done it? And of course you would.
Maybe not. This is a very interesting question.
That's right.
Which, you know, brings us back to the Bhagavad Gita. If this is essentially the framing of the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, is that Arjuna is in a chariot with Krishna. Arjuna, as any human probably would, says, Krishna, all my relatives are standing here. I don't want to slaughter them. I don't care what I'm going to get out of it. I just don't want to, you know, hurt people, basically, especially not people I love. And Krishna says to Arjuna, you know, this is so unmanly of you. I've already designed this whole Leela, this whole divine play. They're all going to die anyway. Get up and fight. And then this leads into the whole discussion of the Bhagavad Gita. And, you know,
then being able to transcend. So you're essentially transcending not only that action, but transcending within yourself to create a greater, deeper state and go beyond the relativity that you're stuck in.
Correct. But it's about an embracing of individual dharma. I do think people should have very long conversations with God if they feel like God is prompting them to kill people. I do want to insert that here. But I think we're circling around a more fundamental point, which is that that pathways to belonging for people who have been through a long series of very traumatic experiences are not going to be similar to pathways of belonging for people who have not been through these kinds of traumatic experiences. What it means to belong, what you choose to belong to, it's a whole different kind of vernacular. And the individual, granted, the individual self, it's nice for it to function well enough for the person to navigate their life circumstances. But this, I don't think that can fall into a very narrow notion and work for a lot of people.
Okay. And so my contention, because this is my job, my role in this, my dharma is to do this therapeutic practice,
right?
This way of helping to change people.
Right.
And I would argue again from my perspective and my experience. So, Allison, you actually know a little bit of my background, mm-hmm. and know that I almost died 10 years ago in a terrible mountain biking accident.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I remember hearing a quote, I believe it was from Maharishi, where he talked about karma is going to happen no matter what. But, you know, this wise man telling his two kids about karma. And they go into the woods and the bad boy, you know, finds a gold coin and the good boy gets a thorn in his foot. And then they come back to the wise master, their father, and say, why is this like this? This is karma. And he says to the bad boy, well, you were going to find your karma would be that you would have found riches of gold and boxes of gold or whatever it was, a treasure trove, and instead all you got was this gold coin. And to the good boy, your karma is that you were going to get eaten by a tiger, and instead all you got was a thorn in your foot.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I still see that there's influences. Yes, there are influences always beyond our control. Regardless if we attribute them to spiritual influences or relative influences, there are always something beyond our control. We can't control our partner in our relationship, what they're going to do or not do.
Mm-hmm.
We can't control our circumstances if we get a crappy
right,
boss.
Right, we covered that. And what you're saying is what actually are the meaningful techniques within the context of limitation
exactly.
that can allow a human being to become more healed and integrated. And I'm just trying to make the point that I think those vary depending on the time, place, and circumstance
yes.
in which the individual will find themselves.
Totally
but because
agree.
One thing that all humans have in common is that they are in a mammalian body, and you know, the work of, let's say, Peter Levine and the work of interpersonal neurobiology mm-hmm. has revealed to us many of the common just, you know, neurobiological mechanisms by which mammals you know, heal, recover, remain calm, and have group belonging. So
or get trapped themselves and their, let's say, their amygdala and their fight or flight, freeze, fight or flight,
right.
or whatever
right.
it is.
Right. So, right. so this is why I think psychotherapy is incredibly useful for so many people in this time. And then the question becomes, what are the most useful psychotherapeutic techniques?
But, and again, that's individual, depend on the circumstances. And I would say, even as a therapist, who trains lots of therapists, who runs a large organization with many therapists who work under me, that even in that situation, that therapy isn't always the answer.
Correct.
Again, we think of it as a package. And it's like, well, therapy might be, but sometimes therapy could be a crutch if you're not willing to do what you need to do. You're using that going to therapy to create greater insight in a course to sit there and go, oh, this is my journey. This is the relative world. I can't stand into the same river twice. That relative, here's what's going on. Okay, great. Now what do I create from this? And so it's always comes back to that statement. It's not, okay, I could feel what I'm feeling or get my experience or and have some greater understanding to my experience. But ultimately, the question comes back to, what am I going to do with it?
Well,
there's
that's
still
your
action step.
Well, that's your question. In the Bhagavad Gita, it says the sage sees inaction in action and action in inaction. So
right.
as a doer kind of person, what are you going to do with it?
But doing simply could mean transcendence. It could mean going beyond and being with it that doing could be doing nothing. And that's still an action in my world.
Correct.
So that's all. So I totally agree.
Correct. Okay. We're on the we're on the same page, Terry.
So, and now where do we go next with this?
Well, where would you like to go next?
I think it sort of goes, how do I have, again, there's experience, there's knowledge or understanding, and then there's action. So we've been talking about this action step.
Mm-hmm.
Where else do we gain acceptance to our understanding and, you know, have that sense of this is what we're experiencing and I now get what's going on? And so what I would suggest is when you see a Jyotishi such as yourself who's can give that kind of leeway, that door opening. Here's what's going on. This is why things have been so difficult.
Yes, it can grant major acceptance. It can grant major acceptance, and it can try to pinpoint what meaningful action would be for that individual at that time, because humans have different capacities based on their individuality. For some people, a philosophical understanding may be a very liberating thing. For other people, you know, some other more mundane, well, philosophy is very mundane, but, you know, some other stream of action, a dietary change, let's say, or,
exactly.
Or a, you know, the repetition of a mantra, which for some people, you know, they would be very enthusiastic about repeating a mantra. Other people would reject it as not being worth their time, and therefore it wouldn't be a useful method for working with their situation.
And that's always individualistic, of course. I think you're proper to sit there and say, again, even in the experience, the understanding, or the action, even within those, it is contextual, it is individualistic, it is then sitting there saying it could be a trap or freedom. Everything is an application.
Mm-hmm.
So having greater understanding, if I'm willing to really embrace my experience, no matter how negative it is, and do something about it, that understanding is great. But if that understanding becomes a trap in itself, so I get people who want to come to therapy who just want to understand more and more and more and get into their head and become more and more obsessive. That's itself another trap.
Yes.
Or I'm crying because my partner left me and I'm feeling bad. At some point, after you've exhausted yourself with the emotion, feeling more doesn't make you feel less. It keeps you trapped in feeling more again.
Correct.
It keeps you trapped in that emotional cycle.
Yes.
Action just for the sake of action keeps you stuck in the spinning cycle of more and more and more.
Yes.
So it's gaining, like through Jyotish work, having that understanding that then moves you to the next point and being willing to do that next point.
Yes.
So if that next point is, oh, you need this stone, you need this herb, you need this action, or you go, you know, this is just bad, and maybe the action is surrender.
Yes.
Maybe that is the action. Stop fighting yourself.
Yes.
And get, okay, things are bad. Take a deep breath and go inside and transcend the pain. You know, I used to do documentaries with the elderly. I spent a long time doing documentaries, video and photographic documentaries. And it was fascinating how even at 100 years old, people weren't afraid of dying. What I found in my documentaries, that people were afraid of pain and
yes.
suffering.
Yes.
And having that insight is a way to alleviate that pain and suffering.
Yes.
Even if that pain and suffering is still there physically, having that understanding and that experience again allows that action of surrender to that pain, so then that pain isn't as devastating.
Correct.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes beautiful sense. And are we almost out of time?
Yeah, we're just about out of time.
So. Okay.
But what final thoughts?
That currently in the time we live, I agree, and I also think that people having a better understanding of death and making friends with death can be an important healing strategy, because to That way everyone has something to look forward to.
Very beautiful. All right. Thank you, Allison. Mental Health Matters, Dr. Scott Terry. Bye, everyone.